Hey, hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 685. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
I'm like,
did he not want to record on Monday because he was still gathering himself? Because, yeah, we had debated prior to recording this one about recording Sunday night. I'm going to guess you were in no shape Sunday night to record.
No,
it
was not.
Yeah, and I wasn't either. Like, when I know that you made the joke on the show about how long the Adam Cole Kyle O'Reilly match was going to be. And you know what? They kept it reasonably long.
They got out of there pretty quick.
Yeah.
Adam Cole must be over that now. Must be completely over it at this point. Just wants to get out.
Yeah. I mean, you don't sign a 1 month contract extension or something in that neighborhood without the thought that you're walking at the end of it, correct?
Correct. Mr. Cole's next moves are definitely going to be very interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess we can get to him in particular probably a little bit later. But that wasn't part of SummerSlam, though. That was part of NXT the next night. That ended entirely too late, even for yours truly, to record. But, their match started at 9:30 at night. And I was just like, yep, no chance in hell I'm recording tonight. Not a chance.
I was barely home by that point.
Oh man, yeah, that would have been a terrible time to record, and or great, depending upon how one looks at things. But anyway, what was your biggest takeaway from being an actual attendee at SummerSlam? Like, what? From a variety of surprises, I suppose, surprised you the most?
That's a little question.
there's kind of a lot of, there's a lot of stuff to go with. Like, you can start, I definitely feel like if we want to direct it a little bit more, the Becky Lynch return seems to have gotten the most press. So let's...
Oh, yeah, we're still... people are still talking about this. And there's a lot of ramifications of all this. Who knew what when? What exactly is the story with Sasha? No one's talking. So, oh. I don't know if we even should speculate what exactly it is.
It doesn't seem like there's any news out there to speculate on, you know what I mean? Like,
no, there really is not. There really isn't. It's a strange situation.
The weekend before SummerSlam, because it was, the one show was in Charlotte. Bianca and Sasha were there for, I'm trying to think of the nomenclature that the WWE used, but they ended up being
unforeseen circumstances.
How dare I forget these very great vagaries. They didn't announce a change in the match at all. It's one thing to me if the WWE says Sasha Banks is out, there's going to be a mystery opponent. Now, is that too much of a tell? If you go there, and you've got to commit the whole way to SummerSlam. Like, did they think Friday that Sasha was going to wrestle?
I don't think so. At this point, I do not believe that they ever really cleared Sasha.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. That came out in the middle of the week. Only reported by PW Insider. No one else really confirmed that they were both cleared to perform. Now, I don't know if there was ever an issue with Bianca Belair and her potential ability to perform. We don't know that or not. You know, if the COVID situation and Bianca kept repeatedly testing negative, and she was in that close, physical proximity, literally all over each other the Friday before, she probably should have been held out.
Oh.
Even if she repeatedly is negative and she's vaccinated, I think that still is the protocol at this point in all professional sports and entertainment.
Right.
And so we don't know if it's a COVID issue. We don't know any. We don't know really whether else could have possibly happened to cause this. But yes, they, once again, I'm absolutely 100% to say, they false advertised Sasha Banks until the very last second. They played the video. Bianca was already in the ring.
Well, that was an awkward trend throughout most of the night. If you did not have Samoan blood, you were a champion. You were coming out first.
That was very strange. And it's very strange for a babyface to come out first and, in these situations.
So I don't know if the WWE intentionally set a pattern before that. But I did kind of notice that a lot of babyface champions came out first, which was really weird. There's some untold story about why this... And it does also seem to be still something that's out there that... Becky Lynch's return was set for October. And I mean,
she looks great, but obviously they did not trust that match, them having an actual match. And under normal circumstances, you would think that Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair would have a terrific match.
Yeah, like, it was one of those things that I literally, like, I was doing a little bit of prep for the next workday. I looked down to cut something, and then I heard the bell. And I'm like, what the hell just happened here? And I had to wait for the replay. Like, that match happened so quickly. I'm like, I wasn't going to be with the second that Lynch's music hit, I thought that title was changing hands.
Yeah, I think everyone did too. I don't think there was a way that wasn't going to happen like that.
Right.
Yeah. Unless they did go through with a quick squash of Carmella and then have only Becky come out to stare Bianca down to make the challenge. That would have been too similar to what they did later with Brock Lesnar.
Oh.
I guess you could do it twice. I mean, people would have popped the same for Brock no matter what, but...
Oh, right.
So, yeah, it's a weird deal. They really did screw over Bianca in this deal. I don't think there's a way that you can argue that Bianca wasn't hurt in this. And if the end game is everyone's trying to say, is that Becky Lynch is going to be a heel. Becky Lynch is going to come out on Friday Night SmackDown and heel for the crowd. She gave no indication that that was the thing. She seemed happy to be back. She was playing to the crowd the whole time. All she did was fake out a handshake and deliver a sucker punch, followed by the the rock bottom thing she does that she's never actually she may or may not have ever actually pinned anyone with before. I'm hearing mixed and usually I'm good at remembering things like that. So
I forgot about that part of the weirdness, because when I did end up seeing the thing, I'm like, has she even used that move? Like, no, that's
it's
how...
It's a regular part of her repertoire. I remember. I don't know if she's
okay.
Used anybody with it. I've been told that maybe she finished Lacey Evans off with it at some point. I'm not sure.
Oh, my gosh.
I blocked out pretty much every Lacey Evans match from my memory.
That is not a if she did it in one obscure match on Raw, Lord only knows how long ago at this point. She's been out 16 months, and I'm not sure the last time she had to wrestle Lacey Evans.
Right. Yeah, that's over 2 years. Yeah. So
yeah,
that whole thing is just.
It's just
a weird deal. It's. You know, deserves to get castigated for how they handled the whole thing. Don't be wrong. Becky's return, Becky's music hitting, and that was a huge moment live. I was totally into it live, and I know a lot of people argued against doing anything involving having Becky and Bianca getting physical and heck, having a match in the hours before when we were speculating over what was going to happen. But, I was okay. I would have still been okay with them having an actual match. But the way they went about it, not good. I don't know how you get Becky as a heel. Maybe people are so frustrated and angry about it that they'll just naturally react that way. But I don't know. I feel like Becky has been very tough on over the years. Becky, before the monster push, when she was underutilized for about 2 years, she stayed incredibly popular with the audience. She has always had a great, long time bond with the audience. Dating back over 5 years now. 6 years, maybe. Something around the lines of, And Bianca, people like Bianca a lot. They've pushed her hard, but I am definitely concerned that, especially if Bianca complains too much about the sucker punch aspect, because it was just a sucker shot. Was it a punch or a forearm? I think it was a punch.
Actually. I think it was a forearm, but I whatever.
Was a sucker punch? Was a sucker punch? Yep.
Yeah.
Bianca Belair went 60 minutes and won the Royal Rumble. She beat Sasha Banks in the main event of WrestleMania. She survived a Hell in a Cell match against Bayley. How did that put her down for 3?
Oh. That's a great question that I have not even thought about. They tried to really sell. And the only reason why, you could tell that this was ready to go, I thought Bianca was a little over the top with the, oh gosh, oh wow, it's Becky Lynch awe. And,
oh yeah, she acted like a fan, yeah.
And that part was, I thought that was awkward, and that's another part of the angle that just was not good to me. Like, even though I wouldn't be surprised for Bianca to have a healthy respect for her, she should be talking about her the same way she talked about Sasha, essentially.
Oh, no, you have to know that she's not just coming down the aisle to say hi.
Right.
She's coming for your title.
Yeah, whether it's just a challenge or, for a future pay-per-view, or literally that night, you shouldn't be. They essentially had her fangirl out for. That has to be the right term. That was really, really awkward. That to me is. I feel like they're going to go with that angle for Bianca. Say that she was just Which I still don't think it's any better of an angle, honestly, that she was starstruck in the moment and she wants a rematch because she's going to be better prepared for it. It's just like, that, you know, that isn't a great look for your champ either, or ex-champion. You know, no matter what angle they go with, it's not good.
Think it is. Maybe they'll get where they want to go. I mean, Friday will tell the tale. But once again, Becky Lynch's music is going to hit in a wherever the hell SmackDown is on Friday. People are just going to be happy to see her. She didn't do anything dastardly enough or say anything that would turn the crowd about
on her.
It's going to take a lot.
Yeah, and the other thing that I don't know if the WWE is forgetting about this in the first place, but she was already kind of heelish to start. Like, the fact that she said she wanted to come back as a heel, like, she was doing heelish things as that version of Becky Lynch.
She really was, yes. She was doing... You know, she was an anti-hero. She was cocky. She was bold. She was aggressive. Yeah,
and I mean, she did do... she did do certain stuff like the sucker punches and stuff like that. I kind of feel like... So it's just like, you're not really changing her character at all. And she was already being cheered.
She had horrible things to Charlotte.
Yes. Yes.
Before they finally just went with the tide.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just like one of those things, just like you said, like, the crowd has always been behind her. Like, no matter what you've done, like, this is, it's an awkward spot to put her, Becky Lynch in, I think. It's a terrible spot to put Bianca Belair in, as well noted at this point.
Someone pointed out earlier that...
I don't get it. Like you said, Becky's gonna be cheered, and there's nothing... I'm trying to figure out if she can pull... even Edge has had a nice evil side to him. Like, you understand why the crowd's still cheering for him. But I do feel like he's changed his character a little bit so that he can operate a little bit better as a character.
And this will be as we thread throughout the show. Keep in mind, though, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Sasha Banks are all heels. And the only two faces that you can really argue are on a top level at this point are Bianca and Drew McIntyre. WWE has a huge babyface problem at this point.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I mean, like, on... you literally are going to have, depending on what's going on with Sasha, you know Bailey's out till next year.
Oh, right.
We're basically going to be seeing Becky and Bianca wrestle two or three times at the very least to get us through the rest of the year.
If that's a feud that gets at least, I'd be shocked if it doesn't at least get to Survivor Series.
Yeah. Although Survivor Series is Raw versus SmackDown, we're gonna get a draft.
Yeah,
they're going to Saudi Arabia. Although they do want more women on the Saudi Arabia shows. You know, it's been 2 years since we've gone back, but a year and a half since they come back. But they're finally determined to do it again.
I saw that announcement and just shrugged.
It was right after this fiasco too. But yeah, no. WWE has a serious I know Becky wants to turn heel. There have been other wrestlers who said, you know what, I want to be heel at various points in life. And it just, you know, Steve Austin wanted to be a heel.
Ooh,
that didn't work.
No. No, it did not work at all.
And it sucked. And it failed. You know, at various points late in Ric Flair's career, he wanted to be a heel. But, you know, never really took. You know, I don't think Becky's at those levels, but she's never really been a heel. A little bit in NXT, but it was never like she was like this dastardly heel that anyone really had any hate for.
Oh, right.
But since she's been on the main roster since 2015, she has been a babyface. Even during that 2 or 3 months where they're trying to make her a heel, it just made her a bigger babyface.
Yeah.
So,
and
this is going to be a very awkward situation. I got to see how people are going to react on Friday. Maybe the people who are actually angry about the treatment of Bianca Belair will focus that energy in a positive fashion and give them maybe the reaction that they're looking for. But this is the company that just last night had so little understanding of human psychology, they were trying to portray Logan Paul as a babyface.
Yeah, I mean, the bad one about that is that they already had one run with this guy, and they heard the reaction, because there was, in fact, a crowd there when he was there. And
they should know.
Yeah, you should know what's going to happen. Like, that one is borderline unforgivable. It's just like, you guys should know exactly what is going to happen here. Like, huh?
WWE has a huge babyface problem. It's coming home to roost. I mean, we'll talk about Roman Reigns in a second and John Cena and the aftermath of that. You know, I assume that'll be the next thing we talk about.
Yeah.
If you're ready to move on, I think we can just go there right now because it's kind of just flow. It flows. It's WWE's issues right now. But once again, I had a great time at SummerSlam, and I said it. Live and or drunk is the way to get through these shows. I had a great time. It was a good show. It was overall a good show. I'd say the pluses overwhelmed the minuses.
Well, yeah, and I think
looking back at it soberly.
Yeah, I think that's why I started at that point. Because obviously, and this is another thing to me that seemed that jumped out at me, honestly. Just because Brock Lesnar ends up challenging Roman Reigns, everyone had been fantasy booking Bobby Lashley versus Brock Lesnar. Bobby Lashley retains earlier in the night, but doesn't get challenged. So, to me, I'm like, clearly, at this point, I don't know if they've ever said it on TV, but to me, if you put both Becky Lynch and Brock Lesnar on SmackDown, you are definitely saying SmackDown is the more important show than Raw at this point.
Oh, you are absolutely... That's absolutely what is being said. It'll be interesting once again what the USA Network people have to say about that. The battle of these TV companies and for WWE's affections. You know, you think maybe... The NBC USA side is has a lot more invested in them with the Peacock deal, but they obviously feel like they need WWE more than as much if not WWE needs them because of that. So it'll be interesting. It's all interesting, but yes, Roman Reigns versus John Cena. You know what? Heading into it through the weekend to the match itself, it felt like the biggest match in WWE in a very long time.
Oh. I mean, they have a legitimate movie star in a wrestling match.
Yes, absolutely.
And on, you know, and obviously, like, you know, well, yeah, he had his thing with The Rock. But, I mean, how many years was Cena in the, you know, like, Cena's one of those guys that, I mean, he spent how many years in the WWE? Was it 16 or something like that?
It's... full time, it was in the range of 15, I think.
Okay.
Like, call it full time.
Okay, but, you know, unlike, you know, The Rock got out of there in well under 15 years.
Oh, it was well under, yes. it was closer to 5 full time.
Oh.
Yeah,
Yeah, he had a rocket strapped to his back. So, you know, Cena kind of took his time. It's kind of funny that, honestly, the ball started rolling with 12 rounds, which can still occasionally be seen on your local cable networks.
I don't think that was where any kind of real ball started rolling for John Cena. It just started, you know, with a few appearances here, you know, a few, the cameo in a couple of, he was funny cameo in a couple of movies, did some guest hosting on some TV shows, I know did Morning America, and, you know, people just started Kids' Choice Awards and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
It became a gradual thing, almost arguably like a later life thing than you'd think for a guy like John Cena to really start hitting his stride in that regard. But not happy for him. You know, this summer has been especially huge for him. You know, 3 movies basically, including the Hulu exclusive Vacation Friends, which does look really funny, and it's gonna be out this week.
Oh, yes, I do. The wife actually wants to watch that one, so I'm sure that it will get watched at some juncture.
Yeah, so, you know, he had a big summer, decided, you know, do we work out the deal through the summer of Cena, build up a match with Roman Reigns, you know. It was a very, very, by understanding, a very good match, they did everything right, there's nothing really wrong with the match.
Yes.
You know, yes. But in the end, Roman Reigns does win cleanly, like and dominantly and definitively. And you know, yeah, the big carry job, not carry job, the big push that they've given him in the last year has absolutely worked. And he also got to find out his next big opponent will be Brock Lesnar, you know, nice, you know, good look, you know, Roman Reigns had good facial expressions during this. I don't even know if the cameras paid as good enough attention to Paul Heyman as they should have.
Oh.
Because Heyman is just groveling, Brock, please don't do this. and Brock only just gives a cursory glance to Paul while just staring down Roman Reigns, who leaves. Now, for the people who did not see this, because this was after SummerSlam went off the air, just for funsies, Brock gave John Cena 2 German suplexes and an F5 on his way out.
I did catch that on Twitter today, and I'm just like, oh, that's hilarious. Poor John Cena just really loves to take those German suplexes.
He really did. John Cena got to his feet, they played his music again. Everyone gave John Cena a single wave. It's like recognizing what John Cena did here, you know, making Roman Reigns, giving people one last little bit of fun, so that Brock didn't just show up to just stare somebody down. He actually did something. No, people understood that, you know, John Cena does not have to do this anymore.
Oh.
It was a hell of a performance from John. You know, he bowed out gracefully. There's something bad you can say about John Cena here.
It's kind of funny. Like, he has, at this point, become undeniable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely undeniable. The fans are just totally behind him. It's like everything else is just water under the bridge. It's all in good fun.
Yeah, dude, then, sold a poop ton of merch in his summer run.
Oh, he did. Oh, absolutely, yeah. he is the ultimate difference maker in the wrestling business right now. We will see if other people can rise to that occasion, but right now, John Cena is the ultimate difference maker.
Oh, yeah.
So we're left with the eventual Brock Lesnar Roman Reigns match. Sneaking suspicion, you could not. I believe that you're going to be seeing that one in Columbus for Extreme Rules.
You know, I still have not bought tickets for that show. There is someone involved in my life that really doesn't want me to be in an indoor event.
I'm fine. Tell her I'm fine. Tell her Jeremy was fine.
So, yours wasn't outdoors?
It was indoors. It was in our stadium.
Oh, I didn't realize that that's... there's. I was wondering why it was only 50,000. And I guess that kind of makes some sense.
Yeah.
Okay, because, yeah, most stadiums aren't... Because that wasn't... I'm trying to think of the place where the Golden Knights play. T-Mobile Arena. is more of the size that that I would be attending.
Right, yeah.
So,
for me,
anyway,
my big purchase mistake, or not really mistake, because it was the seats that were available, they got us club seats. That was nice. No one to the left of us, no one to the right of us. One couple, one or a few people in front of us. Few people behind us. That was the way to do this.
I did think that they looked like very nice seats when you posted the picture.
They're very nice seats and a very nice buffet style catered meal as well. Oh, that's just, this is tremendous.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah, the Brock Lesnar Roman Reigns should be a lot of fun. Like, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. Cause have they ever had a full fledged feud at any point?
They were facing each other hot enough for 6 years.
Oh shit! Yeah. Oh, he kept on losing to him.
Yeah.
Well, this does put a different dynamic on the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely a different dynamic. Brock is the babyface, Roman Reigns is the heel. Paul Heyman cowering in the corner with his thumb in his mouth, in the fetal position. There's a lot you can do with this. My concern is they're going to do it at Crown Jewel. Because they love to have all the big stars on the Saudi shows.
Oh, yeah, that's maybe a good reason not to get an Extreme Rules ticket. Because, yeah, I don't think I'm seeing that. I might see a confrontation or some type of match that ends in a DQ.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right.
It is Extreme Rules. It is Extreme Rules, but I think they've got Finn Balor in the wings for Roman Reigns to just beat somebody. Before SummerSlam.
Well...
You're not going to see a major title change. Well, let me tell you, because I'm also pretty sure that it will lead into, Bobby Lashley's probably not losing his title at Extreme Rules either, and I have no idea what they're going to do with that. We'll get to that in a second, but yeah, I'm thinking that they're going to run Roman Reigns as Brock Lesnar at Crown Jewel. Yes.
That does it seems to fit too, just because Lesnar doesn't, you know, he doesn't work that many dates, and I'm sure he doesn't want to fly here.
But he'll fly to Saudi Arabia for a cool $1 million.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess the number gets raised a little bit because it's over there. So, I guess good on him. So yeah. I guess I could see the Balor match, which would be that would be pretty enjoyable. I do kind of feel bad, though. Like, Finn Balor has the contract stolen from him by John Cena, and now is really playing second fiddle to Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, that's a little rough for him. Yeah. But at least, judging by the current SmackDown roster, at least At least Roman Reigns has some opponents that he can on the regular roster that he can headline a B show against.
Oh.
Bobby Lashley seems to have nothing. They're gonna have to take some things up in that draft to send a Finn Balor or a Kevin Owens over to Raw. Just to get some B show opponents for Lashley together.
It was pretty bad when you're almost going, hold on, are they trying to shoehorn in another Drew McIntyre match already?
It seemed like that might be where they were going to go. Yeah, it does, because I am thinking that being they're going back to Saudi Arabia, you know, they did a non-finish in the Goldberg match and did all that beatdown and the hurt lock on Gage Goldberg, to not have Goldberg come back. They didn't do all that to not have Goldberg come back. I think they'll do that. They'll do that rematch in Saudi Arabia as well.
Or they could do a tag match. Goldberg and Drew versus MVP and Lashley.
They could do that. That would probably be a better idea than another singles match. Well, the singles match wasn't bad or anything. They did as much as they could.
Yeah.
That's what I've been saying about that whole thing the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, that would get Goldberg on the Saudi show and not have him do too much. And I know that his son isn't flying over to Saudi Arabia, so we need a surrogate there, and that works. But I don't know how Raw has the bigger roster, and I don't know who Lashley has to take on at this point. You know, they're really... And I guess I just need to pull up WWE.com to see if there's even anyone in the stratosphere other than Drew McIntyre.
There really isn't. It's pretty bad.
So there's that, I guess. I mean, where else do you go with this? For Lashley, like, this is another one where they have done a really good job of keeping Lashley strong.
They definitely have. Absolutely. Once again, and we've never had this in history. You know, maybe just count the history of having, you know, SmackDown as separate rosters where both shows are just headlined by dominant heels in this way. It really is something to see, and you do run out of opponents for them.
Honestly, like, AJ Styles is an opponent that he could face, but I don't know if that storyline has run its course with him and Omos quite yet.
No, I mean, I guess it would be basically Randy Orton or Riddle. You could do something there, but.
Oh, and they definitely seem to be... I forgot that they were definitely laying some Sheamus versus Bobby Lashley antics.
That's the match for Nick Perron next week. And I hate it when they do that. You know, Sheamus coming off of two big... Came off of a loss and then getting a title shot. I never like it when they do that. And I don't see the Lashley versus Sheamus being at Extreme Rules. I don't know exactly where they're going to go with all that.
I guess he's the only other guy that Lashley hasn't really faced that I would think would be worthy of facing. You know, those are the only two. After looking at the actual roster, those are the only two, you know, other than the two that you mentioned, Riddle and Randy Orton, who were, well, in a tag team right now, because of course, I mean, it's been a fun tag team. Obviously, everyone's enjoyed the angle, but yeah, it's kind of left them a little bit short on challengers for Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, it has, but once again, the draft is coming, so they really just have to get through one more pay-per-view until the draft, I believe, which is way in early October, like probably like the very next week.
Yeah, that's not too bad. They can muddle their way through Extreme Rules some way or another.
Yeah.
What else? I'm trying to think of the other big, because those are the big ones from SummerSlam.
Yeah, those are the big ones. Then we had, well, the best, like I predicted last week, the best Edge versus Seth Rollins, and the best match on the show, I thought. Crowd really into it. Edge, incredibly popular. You know, one of the biggest acts of the night. The Brood entrance, definitely. It was definitely an audience of, mostly of people who got the Brood entrance.
So we're talking
mid-30s to early 50s crowd for the most part. And you know, some, yeah, these people also go, they bring their kids and everything, but yeah, It was definitely in that old audience that totally got that.
Yeah, I popped really big for that. I was pretty geeked. Because when they started showing fire, I'm like, oh my god, they're going to do the Brood entrance. Like because they kind of did this slow camera angle up from the bottom to, you know, shoot him coming up even better. And I'm just like, that's one of those few times that I'm like, ah, they're finally doing things right.
Yeah, that was a spectacular match. You know. Match was excellent, definitely crowded into it the whole way. Maybe the most interesting crowd reactions of the night came during the women's triple threat match. Now, smartly, they did put the Becky Lynch segment before that, so no one was going to chant for Becky Lynch.
Oh.
but they did mostly cheer for Charlotte Flair. But we all did mostly cheer for Charlotte Flair. Nikki A.S.H. got no reaction. It was kind of sad. And then Rhea gets that mixed reaction because she has not had a real solid character this whole time that she's been on TV. And
people
just knew who Charlotte was.
Yeah, so much to unpackage there, because it's all, yeah, it's all on point. Like, I'm glad that Nikki came up with this idea, but I guess I don't completely get it. You know, this comes back to one of those ones, and I mean, and AEW has their own examples at this point, too, where someone comes in with a character, and then it's terrible.
Well, you know, like, in the hands of the writers to flesh it out, and that cannot be good, too. WWE's having a bitch of a time booking babyface at this point. It has gotten really bad. Baby faces are made to look weak. They're made to look stupid all the time, and it's not helping anybody.
Well, and I think that's one of the few reasons why, you know, Drew McIntyre is one of the few people that hasn't been booked that way is a baby face, which is why he continues.
Sometimes his Scottish yarns get a little over the top.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Like, I've started to groan a little bit, but for the most part, it seems like people enjoy those. So even if I'm groaning, like, I can acknowledge that maybe the greater crowd is not doing so.
Yeah, no, I don't see people turning against Drew, but Nikki did not get boots. It was complete indifference, and that's the worst. You know, I hope moving forward, you know, if they're going to make a serious play at Nikki and Rhea as a team, It might suck for Shotzi and Tegan if they get passed over for the women's tag team titles, but it might be for the best for Rhea and Nikki Ash going forward.
Yeah, that was one where I'm sitting there watching Raw, and I go, I don't hate this. Like, I kind of wanted to hate the idea of, you know, it's just another one of those odd couple pairings with the WWE.
Yo, they love those.
Yeah.
They can't stop doing those.
And, yeah, they can't. So, on one hand, I'm just going, I should reflexively hate this, but I was like, weirdly, I'm just sitting there going, weirdly, I think there might be something there, and I'm willing to give them a little bit of room to explore the cowbell and see where this one, because, yeah, I don't think they've done Nikki any favors, honestly, with her character so far. You know, again, even acknowledging that this is, as far as we know, mostly her creation. But yeah, the WWE writers haven't done a good job of, like you said, helping her flesh it out. And Rhea's been a non-entity. You know,
yeah,
like...
We know nothing about her.
Yeah, she's kind of, you know, scary-ish looking, but that's it.
We don't know why she dresses this way. We don't know what her. Once again, I made the comment before. If you sat her down and asked her questions about that music scene, could she answer them? I mean, the real person doesn't necessarily have to, but the character should. It's a weird, you know.
I do think that she could legitimately answer those, seeing some of her workout shirts from earlier in her career. You know, what all she listens to, hey, who knows? I listen to a lot of weird stuff, but...
Right.
I do think that she could, but... Yeah, you haven't been any... given any reason to know that she would on screen at this point. Like, even in NXT, they didn't do that great of a job with her as a character. She just kind of kicked ass, and that was good enough.
Yeah, but now she still can't beat Charlotte.
Oh. Yep.
That's gonna be the albatross around her for the rest of her career, basically. And it's going to suck.
Yeah, this the only thing it made me immediately think, after you reminded me about Brock and Roman there, like, that was the albatross around Roman's neck for a really long time.
It was. It absolutely was. And they dragged that out. They absolutely dragged that out too long.
Entirely too long.
I'll defend the decision to not go with Roman in 2015. The timing wasn't right for it, so they did Seth Cashman. That was the right thing to do. But they kept them apart for too long. Brought them back together a little bit, and then, you were there in New Orleans.
Oh.
That's the most offended I've ever heard in a crowd in my life.
Oh, man. Yeah. And somehow Roman has recovered from that, but...
Well, he had to get cancer and turn heel.
This is also true. We are not in any way, shape, or form wishing that on Rhea Ripley, but that's the only, you know, I guess that's the hole that she's in, and I guess that's what... Maybe that's one of the reasons why my mind was just going, maybe this Nikki and Rhea thing can work. I do obviously hope that they go back to singles at some juncture. But it's probably a good spot for them to do a little character rehab and to have a little get-to-know-you session. And maybe it'll help both of their characters moving forward.
Yeah,
That's the best I had hoped for. Like you said, Shotzi and Tegan Nox might be in trouble because of that. But then again, the women's tag team titles don't mean that much. So they're on the main roster now. That's probably good enough.
That's good enough, yes. I think they'll definitely see the marketability of Shotzi. And I think it's really good. So they should do fine.
Yeah, as long as Tegan's knees hold up, she'll be good to go.
Yeah, that's the one right there.
I mean, that's going to be looming over her for years. Unfortunately,
I wouldn't even walking over cracks on the sidewalk would scare me if I've had that many knee surgeries. I can't even imagine.
It is pretty wild. And, you know, I didn't quite pull up the SummerSlam report here. There wasn't really... I mean, we did get Sheamus, and, you know, there has been one guy as of recently. I am still amused when I see posts that say, the NXT hit rate on the main roster isn't as bad as you think it is. And I'm like, yes. Yes, it is. But I will say I didn't say the hit rate was non-existent. One of the few guys that has gotten called up recently who seems to have gotten a consistent push at this point is one Mr. Damian Priest.
Yes, yes, he's gotten a very good push. It did feel like, once again, Sheamus is into that point where especially if it's maybe an older, smarter crowd, his years of solid work are starting to get him appreciated. So it was it felt like a more 50-50 reaction than you would expect. A very good match. But this was at a point in the show where me and the two very casual viewers that I was with noticed that there's some real issues with the officiating. Like, I think that with all the two counts, the ear falls that have to be done, you'll notice, especially if you're live, really looking at it. As you said, notice that with the lady ref and then the ref with the eyebrows, they are absolutely telegraphing how they stop their hand to make sure it doesn't go down for that three if they're telling a near fall. There are moments where people look, well, the people around us are starting to say, that was BS, that was a three count, and you know it. I'm all in gall and fun, but yeah, it's definitely gets noticeable.
Oh, man, I'll have to pay a little bit better attention next time, whether live or just on... I mean, they're usually within camera view, so you should be able to figure that out on TV, too.
If they do watch that, it can really take you out of the moment.
Oh, man.
These deer falls were not something that was a part of wrestling 20, 30 years ago. All of these deer falls in every match.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is that... I guess a lot of the live crowd still reacts to it, but I'm always just like, I know that that's not the finish, guys. Like, even when I'm there live, I'm like, he's never, like, kind of like the, you know, earlier with Becky Lynch. Oh, she's never pinned anyone with that. Like, why are you worried about this right now? Yeah, there's some moves that they kind of act like are possible pins, but are never pins. Anyway, Damian Priest, one of the few guys to be successful off of NXT. I suppose, speaking of Damian Priest, we could talk about his recent adversaries, The Miz and John Morrison, having it out on Monday Night Raw.
Yes, they did. You know, after they were used for a obscure product placement segment that really felt out of place during SummerSlam the night before. There was no hint of dissension then. Yeah, that segment did not go over well live. But because you have Xavier Woods out there making references to Razor Ramon, people start thinking Scott Hall's going to show up, and then he never does. When you see a segment like that, you think someone really... God bless who Xavier was, but when you see two heels in the ring who aren't supposed to be there for a non-wrestling segment, you think something a little more important is showing up.
Oh.
Instead, they really are just trying to sell some water, some newfangled bottled water.
Oh, man.
And it was late in the show. That was late in the show, too. So, man.
Oh.
Anyway, it ended fine, but it was just like, you didn't really need to do this, but okay. I hope you're getting a lot of money for this water advertisement. But yes, as you said, yeah, the Miz and Morrison are no more again. Which, considering past history, typically does not bode well for one Mr. Morrison.
No, like Morrison's done a lot of great work, well, at least in-ring work, since The Miz has been out, at least initially with a legitimate injury, as far as everyone knows. So, yeah, I guess I kind of thought about it a little bit more. I'm like, man, I feel like they've done about all they could do with those two.
And, yeah.
Because haven't they already won the tag team titles again at some point? Together?
I think they did. I think so.
I guess I feel like they did, but maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, but... So, yeah, like, I was just like, you know what? There's nothing better for either of them to do. Obviously, they're going to initially feud with each other.
But they're having they already have one announced match next week on Raw.
Yeah, but again, with I would imagine with as much time as they've put in that those two will somehow find their way on to at least the Extreme Rules card.
Yeah, very possible, very likely. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else that I'm forgetting that was worth talking about? Anything?
Well, I guess if we jump back a little bit to the Raw Women's Title situation, it was made very clear that Alexa Bliss is Charlotte Flair's first opponent as champion.
Yeah, that was something I kind of forgot about because we talked about Nikki Cross and Rhea Ripley. End of things. We did not talk about Charlotte at all.
That did need to be moved on from. There was no more juice in either of those matches of Charlotte.
No.
None. They did their thing. Charlotte beat them both. Charlotte actually probably beat them repeatedly. So it's like, it's time to move on.
Yes.
They've given Alexa all this time. It's not that, you know, that Alexa's all that terrible in the ring. But we know we're going to get all the Lily spookiness. So, and, well, somebody did mention, it's going to be funny to see if Charlotte even sells it. Because we've seen, Charlotte has a lot of tells when she's not enjoying what she's doing. We saw that during the Lacey Evans deal with her dad. Like, you can tell that Charlotte is not in the mood to put up with this crap.
Yeah, so that part of things will be kind of interesting. You know, it'll be interesting to see if Alexa Bliss has a full-on match at some point here. Like, I do feel like she's still, they've really kept her matches short with interruptions. That's not typically the way a championship match goes, or, you know, it's at least a little bit longer usually than most of the matches.
That'll be interesting.
But yeah, that's another one where there's nowhere else to go. You know, for Charlotte.
No, there really isn't anywhere to go right now.
You know, she's not going to wrestle Eva Marie or Doudrop.
Well, Doudrop eventually, if she gets really over as a babyface.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess at some point you could do Shayna Baszler babyface, but once again, draft, people are going to be moving in either direction. So beyond Extreme Rules, it's hard to see where things are going.
Oh, right.
And a few things like that they obviously set up between SummerSlam and Raw. So yeah, no. I guess I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see how it all plays out, at the very least.
I was not really a big fan of the Charlotte promo on Monday. It felt very rambly to me. And yeah. I'm also like, yeah, I guess it's hard for me to just get invested in her promos at this point. Like, I understand why she's at the top of the card, but it doesn't make me any more excited about the prospect either.
Understood.
So, I guess it's just one of those things that Bliss is a somewhat fresh opponent for her. We'll see how things go. You know, I feel like when they were feuding, it was quite a while ago at this point, because Alexa Bliss has really been off of the wrestling market for the most part for the better part of 2 years at this, I think.
23. You know, yeah.
You know, yeah, she has wrestled very little for the amount of screen time that she gets. She has wrestled precious little. So yeah, that will be kind of interesting to see where that goes. And honestly, do you, since Rampage is on Friday, this show gets it. Do we want to, talk a little CM Punk before, talking about beer?
I think we should, talk about CM Punk. Yeah. We were remiss and we didn't bring up CM Punk, yeah. No, it happened. I assume you were watching, the show at least quasi live on Friday?
I watched it live, because okay. I usually hop on to SmackDown about halfway through, and watch the second half, and then now I just flipped the Rampage after that. And, I thought it was a really smart play of them to lead off the like, I guess I was thinking in my time up to it, it would be near disrespectful to everyone on the roster to not have it be the first thing on the show.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they did it the first thing on the show. Both Jeremy and I were both like, There were too many signs that he was going to show up there. You know, like, as entertained as we were by the thought of him not being there, and that he hadn't fully signed on or whatever, neither of us thought that was going to be the case. And, you know, it was, you know, I guess I'm not surprised that the promo went where it went. You know, I don't... The one thing that the wife said to me, and I pretty much agreed with her, do you think he sells out a 16,000-seat arena without his time in the WWE?
No. Where else would he have gone? For all those years.
Yeah, that's the one thing that just it. I knew that his promo would be mostly anti-WWE, and I'm like, dude, you're Tony Khan isn't renting out a 16,000 seat arena just because, you know, like they've been doing 10 to 12,000 seat arenas in every location that they've gone to. You know, they're not doing the full size arena. And hey, it's smart, you know, work the smaller places. Don't try to overcrowd, you know, don't try to take up more space than you need to. Yeah, there were definitely way too many signs that CM Punk had definitely signed with AEW and that this would be his debut. And yeah, so I expected the anti-WWE stuff, but also, dude, you aren't selling out that place without your time in WWE, whether you liked it or not. And I guess it's kind of weird. Like, it always seemed like I know that he still butted heads with Vince McMahon, but he still seemed to have an awful lot of creative freedom for his characters. More so than most people that have ever been in the WWE.
He definitely did.
But with that being said, hey, you know, it should be a lot of fun with him and Darby Allin coming up at it All Out, which that's also going to be in Chicago, but back at the like the old. I know that you mentioned that the Sears Arena got renamed, and I'm not remembering what it was still.
I don't care what it was. Yes. Yeah. Now at the old Sears Center in Hoffman Estates, you know, the suburbs of Chicago, but obviously still the same market. It's a big deal. I would not surprise me if Punk's match goes on last. It's obviously what they're going to sell the pay-per-view on. I mean, the show was already sold out anyway.
Oh.
But I believe the Dynamite and the Rampage that week that are both going to be in the same building. I don't think those were already sold out. So we'll see if, you know, Punk being around, we'll put those in a sellout. It's once again running the same market, you know, 4 nights in a row, like four, not four, you know, 4 nights in within 3 weeks is interesting.
Oh.
So we'll see how all that goes. But no, it's yeah, Darby Allin's opponent is any, but it. But it, but also kind of a weird opponent because Darby Allin is, you know, a babyface who is
Oh.
going to be accompanied to the ring by Sting, who will typically get will never not get a good reaction either. You know,
Yes,
it
also a
exposes
babyface.
the opposite of WWE. It exposes the lack of heels in AEW because they don't have that mid-level heel that they can afford to sacrifice to have Punk just beat somebody. You know, they don't want to give him MJF. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to give him Miro. They don't want to give him, obviously, Kenny or the Bucks. So it's like, we got to use Darby Allin at the baby face? Okay.
Yeah, you can always work a respect angle for a little bit, and that's fine, especially with this short term. Like you said, the turnaround on this is pretty short. I don't think we'll be seeing a whole lot of CM Punk in the ring before then. I
No, we
wouldn't
will not.
imagine.
There won't be any, no.
So, yeah, I think a respect angle is easy enough to work on, and just you know, keep on, yeah, keep everything on TV with Darby Allin, what little he does. Although I'm sure he can film a nice vignette. Like I guess I've always
Oh,
liked his
we'll say like
vignettes.
this. I do like Darby's vignettes, yes. There's definitely opportunities to do things vignette-wise for this match, absolutely, for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so that's yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I said it on
I
the
am also.
Twitter,
It should be good.
and I'm not joking. Well, so long as I'm around, I think. But All Out, just from that match, I think I'm ready for it. Honestly, because I am. I'm fascinated. Like, as much as sometimes Punk's personality is a little bit of a turnoff, it'll be interesting to see where he is. I did always think that A, he was a great talker, and I, you know, again, I thought he had a good little speech there going on, even if I can quibble with some of the points. And yeah, and I really like Darby Allin's work in ring. I always like CM Punk's work in the ring. It should be a really good match, at least on paper. So, yeah, but I think that's about good for AEW talk. I don't think we need to talk about the other minor stuff from Rampage, unless
No. There wasn't really anything match-wise that stood out on Rampage. It's gonna be interesting to see the evolution of Rampage as far as the level of big matches that end up on Rampage as weeks and months go on, as comparison to Dynamite. If it does fall, you know, after this huge moment, if it starts, you know, sliding, you know, permanently into B-show territory.
Oh, yeah. There's only so many times that you can do a special hometown debut slash match slash whatever for these right. shows. But when we see ones booked in Seattle and or Arizona, we know that Daniel Bryan might show up or Bryan Danielson might show up.
Yeah. That's... Or, hey, Braun Strowman as well could be showing up. Who knows what we'll see. Once again, AEW seems to have just a limitless talent budget.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, but we'll get to those changes when we're there, grandkids. My beverage of the evening, Stay Berry Puffed Sour Ale with raspberry, sweet cherry, and natural marshmallow flavor from Dankhouse Brewing. This beer itself is quite fantastic. It's just a little sour. Gets cut a lot by that natural marshmallow. It gives it a nice sweetness to take the edge off the sourness. Yeah, and it just has a really, really great cherry taste to it. So it kind of is almost like a very, very highly alcoholic Kool-Aid. That's the Bell Time beer. Any drink recommendations in Las Vegas, Chris?
I am terrible at remembering the name of beers, especially since I'm just sitting here with my butt. Did you ever go to the beer house in New York? Did you ever hit that?
No, I did not hit that. I went to Sin City Brewing, is in one of the casinos.
I did hit that, yes. I did hit that briefly, yes.
But I saw you enjoyed a number of cocktails. Any cocktail that you liked?
Oh, the Margarita Cabo Wabo, always a favorite.
Okay.
Arcade at the Hard Rock, but you know Hard Rocks are available all over the country. That's nothing too special there. Drank my first couple of Hawaiian beers in Las Vegas.
Maui Brewing.
I think it was. I don't know if it was Maui Brewing. It was
because that's one of the bigger ones from Hawaii. Kona.
Kona Brewing, yes, Kona.
Okay.
Land Shark and the was it the Wave or whatever?
Yeah.
The Land Shark, I think it was the biggest.
Yeah. Yep.
Those are both excellent. Yes.
I'm not that big of a Land Shark fan, but the Wave is pretty fantastic. From what I remember, I haven't had their stuff in a while, but that's what's sticking out in the old noggin here as far as Bell Time beers go. And I do think that they get distributed at this point through Bud. So a lot of people should be able to grab that. If you can grab the Wave from Kona Brewing, it is excellent. So yeah, not quite a local mention, but yeah, let's go with it. At DeFrango11, at Stunt Cali, the brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of fine podcast purveyors, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.